Thank God it's Friday. We are back on the pulse here on Joy News. And of course, we've got the latest from everything for you this afternoon as we prepare for a very exciting weekend ahead. My name is Elton Brobe, and it's always a pleasure to be with you here on the pulse. Now, this very exciting Friday afternoon, Kesi Ajabin's role as special prosecutor on the line as the Chief Justice considers a petition filed by his predecessor, Martin Amidu, for his impeachment over alleged denigration of the judiciary, procurement, and other breaches.
And in my life, when I take on the reins to do something, I do it to the best of my ability. I often say, those who do not understand tree, please forgive me. They say, I'm a young one, man. And they make cry about for it. Me yet, they meet me. I'm a swan.
This afternoon, we'll walk you through the grounds upon which the special prosecutor can be removed, but can the Chief Justice be neutral in the matter, as one of the charges against Kesi Ajabin is his alleged denigration of some judges. Also in this package, Member of Parliament for North Town, Samuel Ogujatua Blackwa, petitioned Shraj over an alleged attempt by SNIT to sell some hotels to the member of the TP constituency, Brian Champion. And later, as the world marks Hypertension Day, you may want to rethink your decision to bleach your skin, as medical experts warn some bleaching creams could cause hypertension.
Because that is what causes them to bleach. It becomes, you become fair and you thin out and all. That will lead to the hypertension. So steroids directly is the cause of hypertension. Now, the other thing is that these steroids can also lead to diabetes. And diabetes, when not controlled for over a period of time, it can lead to complications like hypertension, especially when it's affecting the kidney.
And of course, we'll engage health experts on how you can prevent and manage hypertension this afternoon here on The Pulse, brought to you by Global Community Zigilo, affordable safe sanitation for all. We are live on DSTV channel 421. GoTV 125, and of course, if you're on social media, you can follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and myjoyonline.com for this and more. My name is Elton Brobe. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Stay right there, because we have a lot more for you as we unpack the matters surrounding the OSP, and of course, take you to Parliament, where the House is sitting in an urgent session. So we're starting off from the office of the special prosecutor, a matter that broke this morning. And former special prosecutor Martin Amidu has filed a petition to President Akufo-Addo demanding the removal of the current special prosecutor, Kesi Ajabin. In a petition dated April 30th, 2024, Martin Amidu alleges that the OSP breached procurement laws in the purchase of vehicles for the office of the special prosecutor. He also alleged that Kesi Ajabin violated the rights of citizens through arrest and detention. President Akufo-Addo, we know, has forwarded this petition to the Chief Justice Gertrude Tokonu on May 6, 2024. We'll get into the details of the petition shortly. But first, listen to Special Prosecutor Kesi Ajabin address a news conference months back, where he alleged there are some efforts to frustrate his fight against corruption.
At the OSP, we uphold transparency, and we inform the public promptly on occurrences and developments in respect of the cases under investigation and before the law courts. We do so where the publication will not endanger national security or compromise an ongoing investigation or unnecessarily impair the reputation of persons under investigation. In pursuance of transparency, we have adopted the policy that the office would issue a media release after every major judicial pronouncement or decision by informing the public on our judges' opinions in cases involving the OSP and stating the position of the office on the opinion in question as to whether the opinion progresses the fight against corruption or inhibits the fight against corruption. This policy is as novel as the office itself. And much like every aspect and operation of this office, the policy has generated public debate on its propriety or otherwise. those who applaud this policy of transparency see it for what it is: public information and assurances of the position of the office on the fight against corruption, and nothing more. Those who decry it see it as an attack on the judiciary. Indeed, I have had several calls from well-meaning lawyers admonishing me that they have heard talk that our friends who have been elevated to the bench and presiding over cases in court do not take very kindly to criticism, especially of the public calling out variety as we do. And that if the office persists in the media releases, the judges will gang up against the office and throw out all our cases. Mind you, members of the press, the collective admonition is from very senior and experienced lawyers who are men and women of the world. Members of the press, my learning of the law for the past 25 years in three different jurisdictions, my teaching and training of lawyers and law students for the past 17 years, my 20-year record at the bar, all bear testimony that I will be the last person to head and lead an institution to attack the judiciary. It will be absolutely of no good and utility should it be the case that the OSP is set against the judiciary, or that the judiciary is against the OSP. That will surely spell disastrous consequences for this republic, especially in the fight against corruption, to the unending glee of corrupt persons. The OSP will not countenance for a moment such an impression. What we do is a statement of our position on judicial pronouncements in the context of the fight against corruption and whether it benefits the quest against corruption or otherwise. And this is so whether the judicial decision in question is favorable to the OSP or not. And to the well-meaning lawyers who call to admonish me, I always assure them that I do not believe that our judges see themselves as above criticism. Indeed, I vividly recollect when years ago, as a private practitioner, a justice of the Supreme Court softly chastised me in open court that I was not churning out enough published articles in critique of their work, because I was a lecturer at the University of Ghana. The judge added that criticism of judicial pronouncements was essential in guiding judges, and he fondly recollected the regular publications of old in the University of Ghana Law Journal and the Review of Ghana Law. I reckon the judge's observation with admiration. Collectively with the well-meaning lawyers who admonish me, we philosophize and wonder if our judges would do such a thing as gang up against the flagship public anti-corruption agency to scuttle its work for whatever reason. Our musings run along the lines of, would that not defeat the fight against corruption? Would that not put our young democracy in danger? Will the judges not stultify themselves in the process? We always end with an open-ended sigh, sometimes a sigh of relief, sometimes a sigh of concern, that may that never be the case. And personally, I do not believe that our judges will ever adopt such a dystopian stance. However, members of the press, there appears to be a developing trend of rather regressive and dismissive judicial decisions in respect of cases involving the OSP with troubling consequences. And it seems to us that a careful examination of these outcomes portends a disturbing specter that the fight against corruption is being hampered to the disbenefit of us all. And I do not say these things lightly. Four instances will suffice. In one case.
Right, so that's the special prosecutor, Kisiye Jabrin. This was in November last year when he updated the media on some cases that were before the court and the decision of the court and his concerns with the way the judgment went. And of course, this is one of the reasons why his job is on the line. And this afternoon, we'll try to bring it out to you. So, per the information that we picked last night, and of course, collaborated by the letter submitted to the Office of the Special Prosecutor, and of course, signed by the Chief Justice, Gertrude Torkornoo, the OSP has been asked to respond to these matters. And of course, Mr. Martin Amidu is alleging, Mr. Martin Amidu is the one behind the petition, and he's alleging procurement breaches and the purchase of vehicles for the OSP, abuse of judges and the administration of justice, violation of citizens' rights through arrest and detention, violation of citizens' right to information, as well as appointment of personnel to the office. And as we gather, as required by Article 146 of the Constitution, the Chief Justice is in a process, and this process is already in motion. The President got a letter on 30th of April. He forwarded the petition to the Chief Justice on the 6th of May. And yesterday, 16th of May, the Chief Justice wrote to the Special Prosecutor, Kisiye Jabin, asking him to respond to the allegations against him. The allegations, his response will form the basis whether there's a case for him to answer or the petition may be dismissed. Those are, this is where we are now. So Kisiye Jabin is now expected to respond to the Chief Justice, and then the next step will be taken. Now, we'll go through the issues one after the other. And of course, since this matter broke this morning, there's been a lot of reactions from anti-corruption campaigners, from legal practitioners, as to what they make of this. There's been entrenched positions taken. There's an issue about whether Kisiye Jabin will have a fair hearing because of the constitutional requirement that give the Chief Justice the power to appoint certain category of people to sit on this matter. We'll explore these matters as well. Let me engage private legal practitioner Lantin Apanga, who joins us via Zoom on this very important discussion. Mr. Apanga, good afternoon, and it's always a pleasure to have you here on The Pulse.
Elton, good afternoon to your listeners.
Right, so let me pick your initial reaction to the news that broke this morning. Impeachment proceeding already underway against the Special Prosecutor, Kisiye Jabin.
Well, Elton, I must say that I'm quite disappointed, and I'm sure most Ghanaians will be disappointed, because the petition against the for the removal of the OSP would mean that our fight against corruption is being defeated. And we all know that for all intents and purposes, the Office of the Special Prosecutor was established to assist the country in the fight against corruption. If that is not even the exact aim, that was what it was meant to be. And to see that having failed with Martin Amidu, and now we have Kisiye Jabin, who we all thought would be a good replacement for Martin Amidu to help fight against corruption. And then we hear that there has been a petition filed for his removal. Mm. It's quite disappointing, and it actually demoralizes every Ghanaian who seeks to support the fight against corruption. It's quite unfortunate and quite disappointing.
Some will say that President Akufo-Addo has done no wrong. He's only acting and respecting the dictates of the Constitution. When he got the petition, he didn't sit on it per the rules governing it within the time frame. He forwarded it to the Chief Justice. The Chief Justice has done her part. She's written to the man in question, Kisiye Jabin. So you exonerate President Akufo-Addo from blame, would you? Or you still stand, or you think that you can take some blame in this matter?
Well, then we have to examine it carefully. I mean, it is not an issue of exonerating the president. I think that the executive has demonstrated over the time that they are not going to support Kisiye Jabin, the special prosecutor, to fight against corruption. We have seen all the bottlenecks that have been put on his way in his fight against corruption. We have seen what has happened in the Sinan Park case. We have seen several other things that have been done. Indeed, we are in this country where we have had previous petitions filed against other persons in government, other persons occupying positions of similar nature. Mm. That petition did not see the president forwarding it to the appropriate quarters for the next action to be taken. And so you would realize that it appears clearly that Kisiye Jabin's actions in the last few months has embarrassed this government and has exposed the corrupt acts of the government to the extent that the government themselves are happy to show him the exit way. And so it is not surprising that you find that the president has acted quickly to forward a letter to the appropriate office, the Chief Justice Office, to examine whether or not there's a prima facie case that will require a committee to be set up. I will not entirely exonerate the president. In fact, the president has demonstrated that he is not ready to fight corruption. He has been described by Martin Amido as the mother of the serpent. And so I'm not surprised at all. And I think that the swiftness in which the president acted goes for the perception that the president indeed is not ready to fight corruption.
But the swiftness, that is why, but counsel, the swiftness, doesn't that find expression in the Constitution?
It does. But then there's been other petitions that have been ignored by this same office. And so what makes the difference in this particular one? You know, there is some amount of inconsistency at the executive level, particularly from the president, that sometimes makes it difficult for us to see that the president is acting in good faith. And so in this one, that's why the fact that, yes, the rules of the of our constitution, the provisions of our constitution, allows the president or requires the president to take the actions he has taken. We have seen the president in the past not taking any action. And so I'm unfortunately unable to give the president any credit for his swiftness.
But again, are we not jumping the gun, knowing very well that the CJ must now establish whether there's a case for Kise Jammeh to answer? We haven't gotten past that stage yet. It is possible that the case may be dismissed at that stage.
It is possible. That is why we are also not discussing the merits or the possible outcome of what the CJ may do. And we will not even attempt to do so. We would have to leave it for the CJ and the response from Kise Jammeh. We are only discussing the actions of the president and what has happened so far.
Let me take you to the act that established the Office of the Special Prosecutor and the provision about the grounds upon which he can be removed. The special prosecutor shall not be removed from office except for stated misbehavior or incompetence, incapacity to perform the functions of the office by reason of infirmity of body or mind, willful violation of the official oath or oath of secrecy, conduct which brings or is likely to bring the office of the special prosecutor into disrepute, ridicule or contempt, or is prejudicial or inimical to the economy or security of the state. Per what we know, Martin Amido is alleging procurement breaches. He's also alleging that per his conduct, and I'm sure that you listened to the insert that we played, that he's denigrated the judiciary, he's brought the judiciary into disrepute. And of course, we understand that he requested some information regarding those employed by the special prosecutor and the salary they are earning. And these are the grounds upon which he's saying that the man may have gone beyond the acceptable norm, and for that matter, he be removed. But what I read to you, what do you make of this?
Well, let me say that Martin Amido may have a point in his grounds for the removal of the special prosecutor, because particularly with the issue of the press conference that is said to have been held. Now, as lawyers, we are trained and we are given the opportunity to use judicial means to resolve disputes that we otherwise think that has not gone in our way. And that is one option we have, is the option for an appeal or an option for a review.
Right.
And so as a lawyer, and Kise Jammeh being a lawyer for several years of experience, knows for sure that if he goes to court and a decision does not go in his favor, the best option for him is to appeal against that decision or seek other judicial reviews. But to hold a press conference and subject the decisions of the court to such public discussion, to some extent, unfortunately, I must agree with Martin Amido that those are not part of the professional ethics that we are all taught to go through.
But when the case is done and judgment is passed, does it stop the lawyer or the party to voice his or her feelings regarding how the case went?
You can do so, but when you use certain words in the description of the judges, to some extent, you are ridiculing the course of justice, and you have bring the judicial system or the entire system into dispute to an extent that Kisi Jabin expressed his frustrations of what was going on in court and described judges in a manner that I would not even want to repeat here. I think that he was not entirely fair to the judicial system. So, as lawyers, we are permitted to write articles to criticize the decisions of the judges. We are permitted to speak and express our opinions, but to hold a press conference and describe the conduct of the judges in that particular manner that he did is rather unfortunate.
So therefore, he has brought this upon himself.
I think so.
And again, Counsel, you want to make a point?
No, I'm saying that I agree with you that he has brought this upon himself, but in the manner in which he conducted himself and the words he selected and chose in his expression during the press conference.
But I've also been going through a website that I'm sure is linked to Mr. Martin Amidu, and it says martinamidu.com, and I found 19 articles written against the office of the OSP and sometimes attacking the personality of Kisi Ejiagbin in all of these articles. 19 articles so far from the period 2021 up until now. And indeed, in December, Mr. Martin Amidu wrote another one with the title, Kisi Ejiagbin Must Be Impeached for Scandalizing the Administration of Justice. And if we should go through, he makes a point and come to the conclusion why action must be taken against the OSP. In terms of, some have said that, as somebody who has held the office before, you shouldn't be the one leading for the removal of your successor. What do you make of this?
Elton, to some extent, I agree with the school of thought that the personality behind the removal of Kisi Ejiagbin creates some discomfort in the public discussion, particularly coming from someone who has occupied the position before. Don't forget that Martin Amidu is the immediate past special prosecutor, and having been in that office and unfortunately came under a lot of public attack for not giving us what we all expect that his office was meant for. And then now he makes a U-turn when a replacement has been found, and he's the one championing the cause for the removal of that person. It smacks of some discomfort. I am not happy that it is Masla.
I think we are losing you, Councilor. Yes, please go on.
An act of good faith.
Right. I think the connection is not doing us any good at this very time. So, lawyer, okay, so we've lost him. We'll leave it here for now. I wanted to ask him how this hurts the fight against corruption, but that is also lawyer. Latifa Panga joined us with his perspective on this very important matter, which is already which has become a very national issue. So let me take it to Parliament, because there's been reaction to this issue. Member of Parliament for Tamale North, Alhassan Sungenim, says President Akufo-Addo is actively part of the attempt to remove the special prosecutor Kisi Ejiagbin from office. The president has forwarded, as you may know by now, a petition by Martin Amidu to the Chief Justice, who this afternoon has also written to the special prosecutor demanding his response to the issues against him. Now, speaking to Joy News in Parliament, Alhassan Sungenim alleged that President Akufo-Addo has been sitting on petitions to remove Jane Mensah as the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, but, you know, they forwarded this when it came to his attention. He's been speaking to my colleague, Kwaku Asante.
To do with the alacrity with which the president has forwarded the petition to the Chief Justice. As for Mr. Martin Amidu and the current special prosecutor, we all know the bad blood that exists between them ever since Mr. Martin Amidu's exits from that place. But my issue has to do with the selectivity with which the President, His Excellency, forwards petitions of that nature to the Chief Justice. Because I am very, very well aware that after he did same involving a petition against Madam Charlotte Osei, two other petitions were sent to him against Madam Jean Mensah. Until date, the petitioners have not even received acknowledgement of receipt of that petition. Again, I know that another petition was sent to him against the former Chief Justice, Madam Gloria, was it Gloria or Sophia? Sophia, Madam Sophia. Again, the President did nothing about that petition. Yet, his handlers want us to believe that the Constitution uses the article shall, and that he has nothing to do with the petitions when they come to his table beyond forwarding or transmitting them straight to the Chief Justice. So the President, as we discuss this, will have to explain to all of us why he does the automatic transmission of some of these petitions to the Chief Justice, but withholds some. Is it the case that when the petition coincides with his interest, in this case, he already is interested in removing the special prosecutor? And so, quickly, with alacrity, within the 7 days, in fact, before the seventh day, he transmits it to the Chief Justice, just like he did in the case of Charlotte Osei, but has decided not to respond to the petition against Jean Mensah and the former Chief Justice, because in their cases, it was not in his interest to remove them. I don't think that a president who is a lawyer, who is supposed to govern with law, should be that openly biased and selective, especially when these issues relate to the fight against corruption. Into the other petitions involving his favorites that are longer on his table that he has never even responded to. So clearly, it is going to serve the interest of the president, and maybe the special prosecutor has touched some of his favorites, and we know how he clears his favorites and how he, you know, celebrates them. In the case of Madam Cicely Adapa, even before investigations, you know, went into the matter, we saw the love letter that he wrote expressing his confidence in Madam Cicely Adapa, and for the special prosecutor to dare disagree with his thinking about Madam Cicely Adapa, you shouldn't be surprised that a petition against the person who has disagreed with him in that manner is treated the way that he's treating it. So it's going to serve the interests of the president. That is why I think that this whole conversation must not be about the merit or otherwise of the petition. It should not be about the special prosecutor or Martin Amidu. It should be about the conduct of the president and how selective he is when it comes to transmitting petitions against people who he has appointed into office. When they are his favorites, the petitions don't get attention. But when the people involved are people that he already has an interest in removing, it looks like he responds within the 7 day period and triggers the necessary actions to remove them.
So the question again is, what next? Because now we know that the Chief Justice has written to Kisi Ejiamhen demanding his response to the allegation against him. And then after, whether he has questions to answer, that will follow. But private legal practitioner Martin Pebu has been explaining the legal processes that should follow when cases of possible impeachment are brought before the Chief Justice. He's also cast doubt on the President's commitment to the fight against corruption. He spoke to Joy News earlier.
Previous justices of the Supreme Court, specifically previous CJs in this country, also there were petitions against those CJs. President Akufo-Addo never presented those petitions. He sat on them. So how come for Kisi Ejiamhen, so he has quickly forwarded it? It's very clear that he doesn't like Kisi Ejiamhen anymore, because Kisi Ejiamhen appears far more independent than Akufo-Addo anticipated. He thought Kisi Ejiamhen would be totally malleable, but he's not getting that. So now the CJ has to make what we call a prima facie case. She has to determine, Justice Tokunu has to determine whether there's a prima facie case. But let's break it down further. It means that looking at the petition, Shedan would invite Kisi Ejiagbin to answer the charges. Let's call them the charges or allegations in the petition. So when Kisi Ejiagbin answers them, and then Justice Tokunu as CJ sees that, hey, the answers don't exactly add up. They don't make the case totally frivolous. They don't make the case Amidu has brought useless. So meaning that in local circumstances, if there is something that shows that there is substance in Amidu's allegations, notwithstanding the answer Kisi Ejiagbin is giving, then he said, then the CJ will go ahead to set up a committee of five persons. Committee of five persons. Now, out of this committee of five, there will be two persons appointed by the Judicial Council, and then three appointed by the CJ. So that committee will be made up of five, okay? Five persons. Now, those five will go into the complaints, or let's say the petition. So that's where they will require Amidu to come and prove his case fully. And then Kisi will also answer fully. By the law, the same Article 146, the proceedings are supposed to be held in camera.
Right, so this is a developing matter and we are following it, because in the days to follow, we're going to hear more on this very issue, whether there's going to be formal impeachment against the special prosecutor, or the matter will end at the point of providing answers. Those are the next steps that we are looking forward to and to bring you more. But we'll stay on a related matter. Don't forget, we also take you to Parliament, because Parliament is sitting to consider some very urgent matters. The reason why MPs had to be called from their break to sit today, they are considering the ministerial nominees that were approved by the appointment committee but yet to be passed by Parliament. They are also considering some loans, and they are also considering a 400 million tax waiver government is seeking to give some businesses. We'll take you to Parliament on that. But a member of Parliament for Northtown, Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa, has petitioned SRAJ over an alleged attempt by the Social Security and National Insurance Trust, SNIT, to sell some hotels to member of Parliament for Abetifi in the Eastern region, Brian Echampon, who is also the Agric Minister. Now, member of our Legal Affairs Desk, Latif Idrisu, joins me live with details of that petition. So, Latif, why is Okudzeto raising this matter? And if you can unmute for me, Latif. Right, so we'll bring Latif back on to understand Okudzeto Ablakwa's petition to SRAJ, asking them to investigate the sale of some hotels owned by SNIT to the Member of Parliament for Abetifi and Agric Minister Brian Echampon. So Latif, I want to understand Okudzeto's issues, if you can highlight them for us this afternoon.
Okay, Elton. So Okudzeto Ablakwa is essentially basing the allegations he's raised on document he has cited. In fact, it's not just a document, it's a letter from SNIT, which has been addressed to the Brian Echampon, who is the one in the center of this whole controversy. And for Okudzeto Ablakwa, that is the basis on which he's basing the petition he has sent to SRAJ. I know we don't have enough time, but I'll just read a couple of paragraphs of the letter that the Social Security and National Insurance Trust sent to Mr. Brian Echampon,
right,
his company, if you like. So the letter is dated the 27th day of March 2024. It's addressed to the board chairman, Rich Royal Hotel. And Rich Royal Hotel is owned by Brian Echampon. Rich Royal Hotel, Kenya, Ghana. And so the heading is Notice of Proposed Sale of SNIT 60% Equity Stake in Rich Royal Hotel.
Right.
I'll just read one or two paragraphs, and then we go into the release being sought by the Member of Parliament for North Tong. Maybe let me just pick one of the essential paragraphs in this whole letter, and then we can move on to the release.
Right.
So let me go to the second paragraph. It says, in accordance with the shareholders' agreement dated the 1st of April 1999, which outlines transfer restrictions on shares as per clause 5.2 slit, is extending an offer to the minority shareholders of Rich Royal Hotel to exercise their first right to purchase our 60% equity stake within a 45-day window. Failure to act within this specified time frame will result in a waiver of such right. So this is an extension from SNIT to Rich Royal Hotels to purchase 60% equity of.
Right, so we appears we have having connection issues with Latif. We'll see if we can bring him back on. Let's see if possibly if we can speak to the Member of Parliament for North Tom, Samuel Okudjetu Ablakwa, who is who is raising this issue and has petitioned Shraj to probe this matter. So Latif, you were making a point about some of the issues that Okudjetu Ablakwa is raising.
Yeah, so I just read a paragraph of the letter from SNIT to Rich Royal Hotel. And so these are some of the reliefs being sought by the Member of Parliament for North Tom. The first is that he wants Shraj to launch full-scale impartial investigation into the imminent and prospective sale to Honorable Brian Achampong of the 60% shares of hotels within SNIT's investment portfolio, which raises fundamental concern bordering on conflict of interest and abuse of power. That is the first relief that Honorable Okudjetu Ablakwa is asking for Shraj to undertake. Right. Secondly, he wants Shraj to investigate SNIT's conduct and procurement process regarding this whole sale of 60%. So not only Brian Achampong, but also Mr. Okudjetu Ablakwa is asking Shraj to investigate the conduct of SNIT in this whole controversy. Third relief being sought by Mr. Ablakwa is that he wants Shraj to also investigate the appropriateness and, if you like, the ethical concerns of Honorable Brian Achampong, who is the owner of Rock City Hotel Limited. The number four relief is for Shraj to make a determination on the eligibility of Honorable Brian Achampong to participate in this transaction. And finally, he wants Shraj to take an urgent step to halt the sale, which he describes as sleazy and not in the interest of the Republic of Ghana. So in the end, what Okudjetu Ablakwa is asking essentially is for Shraj to ensure that this 60% sale of SNIT equity to Honorable Brian Achampong doesn't come to life, and that Shraj should do everything within his power to bury this whole transaction even before it shoots up.
Right. So I guess we will now have to wait and to find out whether Shraj has received this and they've responded to it, and the next steps that Shraj will be taking, right?
Exactly. So now we'll be keeping an eye on Shraj to see whether or not they've received this petition from the Honorable Member of Parliament and what will be the next step. We know this is going to go, it will go through a rigorous process for Shraj to make a final determination, and then whether or not he'll be able to bury this transaction, or we're going to see the 60% equity of SNIT's hotel going to Brian Achampong. The days ahead will tell us everything we need to know with regards to this particular transaction that the Member of Parliament has described as sleazy and definitely not in the interest of the Republic of Ghana.
Right. Thank you very much, Latif Idris. And of course, the key question that we are asking this afternoon is whether this was subjected to open tender or it was sole sourced, and what went into deciding to, you know, I mean, grant approval for the sale of these six hotels to Brian Achampong, the Agri Minister. And I'm guessing now that this matter has been taken to Shraj, we'll get a response also from the Agri Minister, who is at the center of this controversy. Now, former Auditor General Daniel Yaw Domolevo has petitioned Parliament seeking a bipartisan probe into the conduct of the Economic and Organized Crime Office, IOCO, in its failure to probe the controversial stash of money found in the residence of former Sanitation Minister Cecilia Abinadapa. The petitioners include lawyer Martin Pebu, security analyst Dr. Adams Bona, political scientist Professor Ransford Jampo, and other Ghanaians, argue that IOCO had more than enough basis to investigate a former minister for money laundering, as she has been unable to explain the source of the huge amount of money seized at the residence by the office of the special prosecutor. One of the key petitioners, security analyst Adams Bona, says they have gathered enough evidence to trigger a probe.
We've shared every evidence. We've shared almost every evidence we've got. Almost every. When I say everything, it won't be everything. We still have some, but we have shared evidence as much as possible. For instance, you have what do you call that? Some contradictions. I mean, the moment you begin to see contradictions, then you know somebody seems to be lying. Somebody is not telling us the truth. Because then anybody who has followed this particular investigation by special prosecutor will tell you that from day one, special prosecutor started giving us tidbits, telling us what they've done. They spent a whole day or whatever counting money they found allegedly in Madame Cecilia Abinadapa's home. We've got a lot of information coming out from that. Subsequently, special prosecutor said, I don't have the requisite law that supports, money laundering or anti-money laundering act or law, and so pushed the investigations or the docket to IOCO. Eventually, IOCO then comes out. They waited because they were supposed to continue to court, but I suspect they might not have gone or be whatever reasons, either intentional incompetence or just to cover up. They decided maybe not to do that per our own investigations. And like I said, I would say I have a lot more information about this. And I wouldn't want to probably veer into that angle. But eventually you heard the IOCO boss actually saying that, yes, we didn't find anything. We are going to be transmitting the docket back to the special prosecutor. Only for the special prosecutor to come back quickly, to come and say, no, you are lying. You sent us the file long ago, and you see a lot of contradictions. Even the AG himself has contradicted the position of what you call some of the things IOCO put out. So it tells you that somebody is lying. Somebody has either is deliberate or incompetence to ensure that this thing never sees the light of day. And mine is that, ours is that. These two institutions, IOCO and special prosecutor, both of them are under the executive by way of under the AG. And so the truth is that if the AG himself comes out to clear this whole thing, it means that we are not going to see anything come out of it. That's it, the case is done. But the good thing is we have parliament, and the 8th parliament is a very interesting parliament. It's not the rubber stamp of parliament we have seen over the years. This time around, you have 137. It's just one independent who is on the side of the majority. And so when matters of this nature go in, we expect that it will be done in a manner that will be befitting. And if you follow when the volunteers went out, some of the audios, the people killed, in fact, to sign this petition. People are angry. And so as far as we are concerned, this thing must be probed and probed as soon as possible.
So we'll wait and hear Parliament reaction to this petition to probe IOCO over their inability to investigate the matter relating to the former Water and Sanitation Minister, Madam Cecilia Abinadapa. We'll keep an eye on this matter. Plus, take you to Parliament for the very latest on this urgent sitting that is ongoing. But for now, we'll take a short break. When we return, we have more here on The Pulse for you. We are back on The Pulse, of course, with me, Elton Brobe, and soon we will take you to Parliament for that urgent sitting and three key matters before the House: the approval of some ministers, also the request for the approval of $150 million for irrigation to deal with flooding issues here in the Greater Accra region. Of course, another request for the approval of tax waivers for some selected companies totaling $400 million. But before we do that, today is World Hypertension Day. So let's talk about this very important matter and a silent killer, if you like. Now, if you are a lady, and now, I mean, it's not only a lady's matter, men also do. So if you are thinking of enhancing your complexion or your body parts, you may want to think twice about the decision, because medical professionals warn that bleaching and body enhancement products have the potential of causing hypertension. I mean, you didn't know, I guess. Now you know. Now, research has concluded that some bleaching creams containing steroids and mercury that leave the skin with stretch marks can have a detrimental effect on the body, increasing the blood pressure. Emmanuel Bright Kweku of our Science Desk interacted with nephrologist Dr. Elliot Quantem Tanner on some possible causes and risks of hypertension at the World Mark Hypertension Day, and has this report.
It has become a common practice in Ghana for many women and some men to lighten their complexion and enhance their body parts. With varied reasons for the skin enhancement, many people seek after various skincare creams and other medications like pills to have their desired light skin. But it is imagined that skin bleaching creams and pills can potentially cause hypertension, otherwise known as high blood pressure. Dr. Elliot Crantin-Tanner is a kidney disease expert at the Confanoti Teaching Hospital.
Some of these creams that they use to become fair have a lot of steroids in it. Okay, they have a lot of mercury in it, and they have hydroquinone. Now, these steroids, when you apply, you see, what they don't know is that they say, oh, I'm just applying it to my skin. Yes, when you apply something to your skin, what we don't know is that there are very small vessels that are in the skin. So it is invariably absorbed into your system. When you absorb some of these steroids into your system for a long period of time, of course, that is what causes them to bleach. You become fair, you thin out and all. That will lead to the hypertension. So steroids directly is a cause of hypertension. Now, the other thing is that these steroids can also lead to diabetes. And diabetes, when not controlled for a period of time, it can lead to complications like hypertension, especially when it's affecting the kidney. And that can also lead to hypertension.
A 2023 Integrated Africa Health Observatory report declared skin bleaching as a global public health concern, with 80% of African women regularly using skin whitening products. The prevalence rate of the menace in Ghana is pegged at 39%, as many women continue to resort to cosmetic creams to have a skin believed to be the most sought after by Ghanaian men.
Might be some creams that probably might not have these contents that we are worried about. Okay, probably it doesn't have mercury, or it doesn't have, you know, steroids in it, or it doesn't have, and probably it helps your skin to look nice. Probably that is okay. Maybe aloe vera, or it has, you know, natural things. I don't have a problem with it. But the point is that how many of our women look at content? It is so important that we realize that it probably is an FDA component also, because the amount of steroids in those creams are so high that they could lead to problems.
Disturbingly, some expectant mothers have caught on the vogue as they take in medications in attempt to bleach their unborn babies.
Another thing that I also heard, I mean, very interesting, that nowadays women actually take prednisolone, I mean, PE they call it, and now it is not just to make themselves fair or probably to make their butt bigger and all, but I heard that now people even use it to make their, when they are pregnant, so their children will become fairer.
Skin bleaching is only one of the many causes and risk factors of high blood pressure. While family history and aging are termed uncontrolled risk factors of the disease, poor dieting, intake of excess salt, and sedentary lifestyle are common causes of the disease.
Hypertension exists, and it's not a disease of the rich alone. The poor are getting it, male, females are getting it, but you and I can do basic things to prevent ourselves from getting it. And if we are told we have, it's not a death sentence. If we take our medications and exercise, cut down on our salt and eat well and all of that, chances are that we'll not get the complications and we'll live our lives to the full.
As this year's theme for World Hypertension Day emphasizes, measure your blood pressure accurately, do well to control it, and rest assured you would live longer. Reporting for Joy News, my name is Emmanuel Bantquick.
All right, so let's deal with this very important matter. And of course, I didn't know that if you are undergoing body enhancement, you should be worried about hypertension. All right, so, I mean, what should you look out for and how do you stay safe in this environment? Dr. Florence Akumia is a cardiologist fellow in training. Dr. Akumia, you're welcome. Second time here. Right. And, of course, Dr. Jacqueline Thompson, a CDU family physician, also with me here in the studio. Dr. Jacqueline, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So the clip that we just played, I mean, skin bleaching and body enhancement, how connected are these to hypertension? Let me start with you, Dr. Akumia.
Okay, so I think Dr. Cranston Elliott right. did a good job of explaining everything. And essentially what it does is that it causes a hormonal imbalance. It can cause what we call Cushing's syndrome. Mm-hmm. And that hormonal imbalance will cause hypertension. So that is one of the secondary types of hypertension. So with that, you know the cause of the hypertension. Yeah. But more commonly, we have the essential hypertension that you really don't know the cause, just that we know some risk factors for it.
And then I think a lot of people will be watching this and they will be scratching their heads and say that how is this possible? That I'm bleaching and I mean the effect of that beyond the fact that I may have skin issues in the future, I also have to deal with hypertension.
Yes. So a lot of all medications have side effects. And oftentimes, most of them, sometimes when you use them for a long period and you experience those side effects. So steroids have medicinal value. We use it to treat a lot of conditions. But long-term exposure to it causes offsets the balance of your hormones and then predisposes you to hypertension. Now, those who are using it over the counter, they may not be using it at an appropriate dose and they may be using it for too long a period.
Okay.
And that's why they get hypertension from it.
Let me bring in Dr. Jacqueline. So today we are celebrating World Hypertension Day. And how serious is this topic?
Okay, so hypertension has become a global problem. And worldwide, currently about 1.4 billion people are estimated to have high blood pressure. Half of those people don't know that they have high blood pressure. So they are walking around and then all of a sudden they suffer a stroke or they develop blindness or any of those complications.
And the reason is that they've not checked, so they don't know their health status.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, it's not the norm for us to go to the hospital when we are not sick. So most of us feel that we are fine, we're walking around and then the blood pressure is high. There are no symptoms. That's why hypertension is called a silent killer. So then it comes at you unawares. So that's how terrible the problem is. And as time goes on, the problem is increasing. So we need to do something about it now.
And from where you sit, I mean, how widespread it is in Ghana? You give us a global picture. But in Ghana, how bad is the situation?
So the situation is getting worse and worse. I mean, as we go to run our clinics every day, we see quite a number of people. About 60 to 70% of the patients that we are seeing in our clinics, that's for the primary care physicians. We see this number of patients who have high blood pressure. So the numbers are increasing, and it's increasing at an alarming rate. And all this is also because people don't know exactly what they are doing wrong or they are doing right. We are not eating as we should. We are not eating healthy food. We are not exercising. We are living a sedentary lifestyle. So all these things are contributing to the problem.
I'll come back to talk to you about the causes and the ones that we should look out for. But Dr. Akumia, this week we've been very heavy on kidney and dialysis treatment because Parliament decided to increase the dialysis treatment for public hospitals with the passage of the fees and charges. And then in the course of the discussion, we got to know that one of the ways to develop kidney issues is that if you are hypertensive. And as a cardiologist, I'm sure that you attend to them almost on a daily basis. How bad is the situation from where you sit?
Yes, so it is very bad. Chronic kidney disease and hypertension are really interrelated. It's actually bidirectional. If you have hypertension, you can develop chronic kidney disease. And if you develop chronic kidney disease from any other cause, you can develop hypertension. So oftentimes, if you have chronic kidney disease, you're definitely going to have a high blood pressure. And oftentimes, it's more difficult to control in that population.
And I mean, so you get to see these cases almost on a daily basis?
Yes, like she said, hypertension is one of the leading causes of people to present to the OPD or even to the emergency because they come with hypertensive emergencies. So what it is that current statistics is about, if you take about three people, one of them has hypertension. So about 33% of the population from 30 years to 79 years has been found to have hypertension.
30%?
33%. And in fact, the data shows that it was even more prevalent amongst women, that which was about 36%. So there is a high prevalence of hypertension. Imagine taking every one in three people among that age group having hypertension. So eventually, you're going to find out that a lot of people have hypertension. And like she said, it's underdiagnosed. A lot of people do not know they have hypertension. For those who know they have hypertension, a lot of them are not being treated. Mm-hmm. Those who are being treated, a lot of them are not even achieving the targets that they need to achieve. Mm. And that's why we have a lot of the complications like chronic kidney disease developing.
And then in understanding this issue further, I mean, we've got to understand that Comfort, not teaching hospital, for example, same doctor, Dr. Tano we spoke to, that they did some research and it came up that 2 out of 3, in terms of the age brackets, now between the ages of 18 and 30, they recorded more people with hypertension, and it was quite staggering for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought this was an ailment for the aged and the rich, and our younger people are also contracting this. What could be the possible cause? Is it lifestyle or the kind of food we are eating or the general stress in the system?
Okay, so...
Yes, but perhaps yes. I'll start with Dr. Jacqueline and I'll come to you, Dr.
Yes, Kenya. So I think you hit the nail right on the head. The causes of disease in this age group, 18 to 30, and even sometimes younger people have high blood pressure, and this is because of the lifestyle. It's got more to do with what we are eating. So now we westernized our diet. We are eating a lot of fast foods, and this contains all the things that we are not supposed to be eating, trans fats, saturated fats that we are not supposed to be consuming. And then life has become more sedentary. Our younger people are not going out to play, especially the children that are coming up, not playing as much as they used to because there's increased screen time. Mm. And then the kinds of food that we are eating also contains a lot of salt and then oil. So those are some of the things that are causing the issue. So it's mainly a lifestyle disease.
But Dr. Kumia, the danger here is that, I mean, you may come to understand that you are hypertensive. But the more dangerous aspect is that if you don't treat it, then you develop into secondary issues like kidney failure and the rest. And so it becomes very important that we take care of this matter very seriously. But the ordinary Ghanaian, does he take this serious?
Okay, so current data, Ghanaians have been found to have a poor health-seeking behavior in that we don't initiate seeking health care. It has to be prompted by something, by illness most often, or maybe if it's compulsory for an occupational requirement, then we go and have a health screening. But ideally, you should be having an annual medical screen. And
Say four times in a year.
As often as you can, but at least once a year. How often it becomes depends on what is found once you go. So if you go and you declare to have a clean bill of health, as often as you can, check your blood pressure, do a few tests, you do. But at least once a year, you should have it.
Because age is an issue here, and we have more younger people getting it. Mm-hmm. For the 18s and the 20s and the 25s going, you would recommend the same for them, that they should have periodic health screening?
18 years and above, you should have periodic health screening. And there's avenue for that. Fortunately, thanks to the Ghana College, a lot of family physicians are in the system. So you don't necessarily need to come to a teaching hospital to see a physician specialist or a cardiologist to have that screening. Primary health care services are available everywhere in the country. And they have wellness clinics that are set up various places across the country. Even if it's not a specialized wellness clinic, once you go to the hospital and tell the doctor, I'm here to assess my health, a full assessment of my health. There are a lot of examinations that they'll do. They'll ask you a lot of questions to assess your lifestyle risk. They'll do some examinations, they'll do some tests, and then they'll have a conversation with you discussing overall your risk and what they have found. Mm-hmm. So that is how you can be diagnosed with this silent killer called hypertension and many other risk factors that are associated with it, like diabetes and high cholesterol and even being overweight or obese.
Let's talk about food and the kind of food that you should eat, especially now that, you know, the Ghanaian is all about fufu and then a lot of carbohydrates. So Amos Ajayi-Jemfi, a senior dietitian with the University of Ghana Medical Center. Amos, you're welcome to the Pulse. If you can unmute for me, Amos. I still cannot hear you, Amos. If you can work on the audio for me so that I'll get back to you to deal with this.
Hello, sir.
Right.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. So what should I eat to stay safe?
Okay, so as Ghanaians, we shouldn't be modernizing our diet as in following the Western diet. Our local diets are good for us. But it's just about what goes into it. Ghanaians are consuming too much fat and too much salt. Too much of the processed foods, we are avoiding the natural fresh foods. Those are the challenges we're facing now. But not necessarily going to eat the westernized canned foods and stuff like that, which makes you feel affluent. Not that. Our local foods are good. But just that what goes on the table, I mean, the moderations with which we pick them, those are the necessary bits that we need to consider.
So if you are to give, I mean, me for example, and those who are watching, a week, you know, diet plan, what should that contain?
Okay, so all our foods are good. Let's say in the morning, for your cardioprotective health, as in, it helps with reducing your risk of hypertension, you need to look at a cardioprotective diet, which is good in whole grains, less salt. I mean, when you talk of salt in Ghana, when someone says, oh, I just put a pinch of salt in it, someone's pinch of salt might be more than 5 grams of salt, which is a teaspoon. But technically, on a daily basis, it's recommended that you should have about just a teaspoon of salt for the whole day. And it is also not advisable to put salt at table. That is one bit of it. And then coming to the diet, like I said, our usual breakfasts are good. But you shouldn't have the excess of the oils. Assuming I am going for our usual Hausa cocoa by the streets with the kose, we should try as much as possible to get the excess oils out. Maybe you could have some tissue to wrap it in just to soak a bit of the oils. Mm. Because the oils, we know, as our doctors have already said, tend to build up in the system, increase your cholesterol, clog your blood vessels, increasing the blood pressures. That is one. Your routine, afternoon watching, and all that are all good, but you see, the caution that you consume is the issue. We tend to eat much, excess carbohydrates lacking in our blood will obviously be converted to glycogen that is also stored, compounding the storage of fats, which will eventually also lead to these hypertensions. So we must watch our diet, and especially in the evenings, we should avoid the oily soups in the evenings. We should try to go for the soups, which does not have much oil on the surfaces.
All right. But this
would help us cut down. And then the salt, especially, aside the genetic and other congenital causes that may predispose you to hypertension, salt alone, cutting down on salt alone would also protect you from, if you've not had it, from getting it, and then if you had the hypertension, from getting you into a bad state, it will help you reduce your condition.
But, I mean, I have been listening to you, and you have been very consistent on salt. Is it your recommendation we should cut it off completely?
No.
You say we should reduce it to what extent?
We must put some taste in our food. So, like I said, if you are not sick, trying to live healthy, at least a 5 gram salt, which is a teaspoon rounded for the whole day, whether breakfast, lunch, or dinner, spread across is recommended. If you already have hypertension, maybe you should use a half teaspoon leveled. And then we should also, as Ghanaians, we Africans, we are used to our herbs and spices. So incorporating the herbs and spices, our lemons in our meal preparations would help us enjoy meals. It will bring out the flavor, and we'll be able to savor the meals without having to add these condiments that tend to worry us in terms of the blood pressure.
I've heard things like you should eat breakfast like a king and then dinner like a slave. But I'm sure you also say that we should consume more vegetables and do a lot of exercise.
Yes, for the vegetables, it has been proven that it helps. Especially for the vegetables, they contain fiber. That we all know. And then with the fiber, what happens is that when it gets into your GIT, it is not absorbed. It forms a complex with the fat, with the excess fat you consume, and then it is passed out into your feeds. Okay, so if you consume more fat, it creates the bulk that prevents the rapid absorption of the fat and lipids into your bloodstream. You get it. So eating more of the fruits and then the vegetables actually help you regulate your cholesterol levels, and then especially with the salts too. There's a direct link between salt intake and then hypertension.
All right, thank you very much.
Aside the other medical conditions. Thank you. These two, which check, will really help.
Thank you so much, Mr. Adujian Fisinia, dietitian of the University of Ghana Medical Center. And as we are about to wrap up, I mean, let's get practical here. For example, I came to work at 5 a.m. today. I'm still here. By the time I close and get home, traffic and everything will be around 7 p.m. leaving no room for any kind of physical activity most time of the week, except on weekends. And I know a lot of people in Accra can relate to this scenario of the day. How do you advise such a person to stay safe?
Okay, so leaving home so early, getting back home late, causes a lot of problems. One of those is stress, and then it makes you live a sedentary lifestyle. So some of the things that you can do is make sure that you are eating a healthy diet, like Amos mentioned. So incorporating a lot of fruits and vegetables into your diet. And the vegetables and fruits also contain a lot of potassium, which helps to, when you consume, helps to eliminate the sodium and thereby reducing the high blood pressure. Mm. Also, exercise. Most of the time, we give the excuse that I can't do much. Mm. So when you come to work, when you sit for an hour, get up and walk around for about 10 minutes, or even when you are sitting at your desk, you can move your legs under your table. Sometimes there are certain little exercise machines that you can have under your desk that you can use. But then also certain things that can help you to move around is if you have a smart watch. It will remind you that you should get up and then move. And then reducing the stress levels, that's something that is a little bit of a challenge. Mm-hmm. But there are certain techniques that when you visit the hospital, we will be able to teach you to minimize the stress levels. So these are a few things that you can use to help in reducing.
Dr. Kumia, for those who already know that they are hypertensive and they are on medication, sometimes the excuse we get to know is that some say that the side effect, especially for the men, it affects their potency. Do you have a response for that?
Yes, so it's a well-known fact that some antihypertensives can do that in some people. First question is that not everybody is going to experience that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that it's not all antihypertensives that do that. So there are common antihypertensives that your doctor is likely to prescribe for you. And there are a host of side effects that may come along with it. If you experience any side effects, you have to report it to your doctor, who is then going to assess whether it is due to the medication or something else. Sometimes it's even due to combination of different medications. Right. So they'll assess that and then maybe change the medication for you. Now, the other thing is that hypertension itself can also cause narrowing of the blood vessels in the whole body, including the blood vessels that supply the penis. So you are at risk of developing erectile dysfunction anyways if you do not treat your hypertension.
Right.
And you are also at risk of developing a stroke, heart failure, kidney disease, and all
that is if
else
you're not treating it.
If you do not treat it. Mm-hmm. So if you treat the hypertension and you get erectile dysfunction, the medication can be changed or another medication can be given to tackle the erectile dysfunction. So you've weighed the benefits and then the risk, and you realize that it is better and safer to treat the hypertension.
Let me pick final thoughts, Dr. Jacqueline, as you look into the camera, what are you telling Ghanaians?
So Ghanaians shouldn't wait to get sick before they go to the hospital. Go to the hospital, go and get your blood pressure checked, get your blood glucose checked, get your cholesterol levels checked. Have yourself checked before you fall ill. And then when you have hypertension, take your drugs religiously. The drugs may have certain side effects, but like Dr. Akumia mentioned, the drugs can be changed so that you have better hypertension control so that you can live a longer, healthier life.
Did this BP kit that is now available, anybody can buy it and check it, is it so reliable?
So many of them are. And if you get it from a good pharmacy, you're likely to get a good one.
Mm-hmm.
You can also check it by using it and also using something in the pharmacy or in the hospital. Then you can compare. It's a sort of way to validate it that it works well. And you can use that. There are newer ones. Some people have watches that check blood pressure. I mean, technology is advancing. But as much as you can, if you get a good arm cuff one, it's good. There are wristband ones that are also working. So any of it is fine. And if you go to the hospital...
What time is it good to do the check-in?
Okay, so blood pressure usually is higher in the morning than in the evening.
Time you wake up?
Yes. Mm-hmm. If we are trying to diagnose it, we usually let you check both morning and evening for a while, maybe about 2 weeks before we assess the trend and see whether you have hypertension or not. So you could check it both morning and evening and see whether it's high or low.
But you cannot even determine whether you have it high or low, so, depending on the figure, because of the availability of knowledge, there is a category. If you fall within, you know that you are in the danger zone.
Yes.
You are not in the danger zone, or you are in the safe zone.
Yes.
You on your own can do the calculation and say that I'm safe.
Okay.
But you still need to go to the hospital and have it, you know, reviewed for you.
So when you check your blood pressure and you are getting values that are 130 and above, it could be a red flag. In Ghana, our diagnosis of hypertension is when it's 140 or 90 and above.
Right.
So the upper one, if it's greater than 140 or equal to 140, and the lower one, figure, if it's greater than or equal to 90, that's when we diagnose. In the U.S., they diagnose it at 130, 80. So that is the difference. And for us, we say that if you have 130 and 80 and above, then it's a red flag.
Right.
So you need to go to the hospital. They will check you for other risk factors. And if you have those risk factors, it even increases your risk. So that will determine the intervention that is done for you. So it's good to check on your own. If you notice that your blood pressure values are high, you go to the hospital with a chart, you speak to the doctor, and he does all the necessary things to add on to that.
Dr. Florence Akumia is a cardiologist, and of course, Dr. Jacqueline, thank you so much for coming through as we celebrate World Hypertension Day. Folks, so this is a very important subject, and I'm absolutely certain that you're taking some lessons from this as we all take care of our health. Let it be a call for you as you go into the weekend. For now, though, Parliament is considering the proposed $150 million to deal with the flooding issue in the Greater Accra region. There is some disagreement regarding the scope or the proposal before the House. I cannot take you live to Parliament now, as the House sits to consider some urgent business brought before it.
Clerk at table, let's start head count. It's very clear to all of us that those to my right, members of the governing party, voted aye. Those to my left, members of those in opposition, voted no. So as we call your names, we will take accordingly. And that's why I say when your name is mentioned, please show your head so that the head can be counted. Yes, may we start now.
Abaka Samuel Erickson.
Please,
violence. Abanga Abdullahi. Abdul Latif Dan. Abdul Salam Adams. Ablakwa Samuel Okujeto. Abuaji George Kwame. Abuaji Kwejo Nyamkong.
Honorable members, be seated.
Abuaji Kwejo Nyamkong. Abdullahi Bazurewa. Achamkong Brian. Achamkong Charles. Achamkong Richard. Sophia Karen Adam. Akwa Alexander Kwesi.
Yes, Majority Leader, any problem? Honorable Brian Achampo, the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, has been in this chamber. Come on. Mr. Speaker, no. Mr. Speaker, when the minority leader misled us and misquoted the inflation, food inflation, he corrected it. Why would you shout that he's out? Why should you do that? Mr. Speaker, you have ruled that when a member is in the chamber and he excuses himself, yes, and he's present. You know he's present. Mr. Speaker, Honorable Majority Leader, please. Mr. Speaker, I would fortify myself with the rules of this house. Mr. Speaker, I will fortify myself with the rules of this house. Mr. Speaker, under 1521, Mr. Speaker, with respect, I would encourage my colleagues to use the rules book. Mr. Speaker, quote, the Speaker shall take the vote of the House in the case of a head count by calling upon members who support or oppose the person to rise in their places successively. Mr. Speaker, so what it is that, Mr. Speaker, first, they are the nays. They are opposing. Mr. Speaker, the rule requires that they would have to rise. So let us do the head count. Rise at your place, Mr. Speaker. That's a provision. When we are done, then they do the counting. That is the rule. Mr. Speaker, please read the order. Read. Mr. Speaker, it reads, provide, the Speaker shall take the vote of the House in case of a head count. What we are doing is head count. By calling upon members who support or oppose the person to rise in their places successfully. Mr. Speaker, please, honorable minority leader, please take your seat. Let me finish. Mr. Speaker, so they would have to rise in their place. You've not risen in your places. They call you, you are seated. Honourable so that members. We cannot count, Mr. Speaker, unless they mean I am discussing the rule. Honourable Majority Leader, please resume your seat. Table office, you may continue with the count.
Alpha Alexander Akwesi. Mohammed Amin. Adams Kofi Idi. Adi Tidy Safori. Adwi Alfrempon. Ejoy Kwesi Boateng. Adum Frederick Obin.
Count underway here in Parliament. It is a rolling coverage of today's emergency sitting that Parliament is undertaking because of that request from the majority in Parliament to consider some key government business. Three-item agenda: approval of $150 million loan. There's also the request to approve ministerial nominees as well as some tax waivers. This is the first order of the business that the House is currently considering, and is a $150 million loan. There was a back and forth debate, the minority opposed to this. In fact, we heard from the minority that himself, Dr. Kisalato Forsen, who says he will now report the government of Ghana to the World Bank for how it has expended some $200 million for the Greater Accra Resilience Project. He says that the government of Ghana has not spent that amount properly. But Abinor Siasare, the Deputy Finance Minister, coming in to say that government has properly accounted for how the first $200 million was expended. The Finance Minister himself promising that he will ensure that if this $150 million loan is approved, it will be properly spent. But the minority will not budge, and they've been asking for head count. There were two voice votes. The first one, the Speaker of Parliament said he could not make a decision. There was a second voice vote that the Speaker of Parliament then said that he claimed that the majority side may have won the vote, which the minority challenged. And so there's currently a head count going on. Every single member of parliament will be called. Every member of parliament will be called to rise up and be counted in their feet, so that they will, at the end of the day, realize which of their side have won. If all that we've seen so far is to go by, it means the majority side may be able to bring all their 137 members on the floor. I see all of them here. The minority as well, having brought all their members of parliament on the floor. And so this is quite crucial. I see Afenyo Marking, the majority leader, making frantic calls to members of his side who may not be on the floor now to come around to be counted, because this is a crucial $150 million loan that government has said will help in stabilizing the city, which is currently having some of its worst times, currently struggling to match up against the US dollar. So that is the situation here in parliament. There's a head count ongoing now, after two voice votes was challenged by the minority, who say they are opposed to this $150 million loan, and they do not believe that government has properly expended the funds. And so that is the state of play currently here in Parliament. After this, they will move on to the ministerial nominees, and then leadership of the House will decide if the tax waivers should be dealt with or not. Already the minority side have signaled that because of a few issues having to do with committees having not concluded their work, they do not think this is the time for the House to stay late into the night. And so those are some of the questions that are now being asked. There's a lot of frantic calls being made by the whips, the majority whips who are all over the place trying to ensure that all their members are on the floor for the vote. See Roxy Nelson, the family who has been appointed by the minority to be checking that the majority side have all their numbers in and that nothing will be smuggled in at the end of the day, because ultimately they believe that the majority side may not have the numbers to be able to end this vote without it. And so there's a major high count on the way. The whips are at work, particularly on the majority side. They need to have all their 137 MPs right on the floor to be able to get this $150 million loan over the line. Government needs this. It's one of the key reasons why Parliament, despite being on break, have been asked to come back to the floor to deal with these businesses. And so it's crucial that they get all 138 of their members to be on the floor, 137 of them, plus the independent MP, the second deputy speaker, who is currently seated also, so that they can get everything they need to be able to get this over the line. The Speaker of Parliament also sitting there with watchful eyes, ensuring that everyone is properly accounted for.
So we've been watching live pictures from Parliament. The debate or the proposal before the House is for the consideration of $150 million loan for the Accra irrigation projects. That's the Garrick. Now, there was an initial vote, and then the minority didn't accept it, so there's a head count to now determine which side will carry the day. There's also another proposal for the House to approve some ministers vetted already, passed by the Appointment Committee, are yet to be approved by the plenary. And that's also a proposal before the House. And the third proposal is for the House to approve an almost $400 million tax waiver for some selected companies. And already, the first agenda has yet to even go through. So clearly, a long day for Parliament as they seek to consult these three urgent business. But that's our show for today. The pause. We will be back same time on Monday. Whatever you are up to this weekend, I hope it's profitable. But we'll take you back to Parliament as they go through this headcount to determine which side will win the day for the $150 million proposal before the House for the Accra flooding issue. My name is Elton Bobby. Have a good evening and a lovely weekend.